This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks. Later in the hour, we'll hear about the future of Korea. But first, joining me is author Alice Connor. She's written a new book called How to Human, an incomplete manual for living in a messed up world. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Pastor Alice, good afternoon.
Hello. How are you?
Great. So I read your book, and I think I'd like to talk a little bit about what your ideas that everybody needs to do to be a better human. And you see they need to practice kindness, they need to practice honesty and awareness. Mm-hmm. So that's it. So we're done, right?
Done. Yeah. Nice to talk to you guys. Bye.
Okay. But that's not so easy. Let's take those separately a little bit. Being kind to other people, that's not always the easiest thing to do. How
it
do you
really
suggest
isn't.
People do that?
Yeah. So the very first chapter in the book, I talk about the title chapter, the chapter title is Taking People Seriously. And I think it strikes me that kindness probably arises from a sense of seeing other people as actually people. It's very easy to watch the news or, for goodness sake, read your social media feed and see people as the enemy or as just some sort of idea, as opposed to people who have a full life, a complex life. It's like, what's actually going on in their interior world, right? And so it strikes me that compassion comes from this space of looking at someone else and going, they're an actual human being. They came to this thing that they're saying, even if I think it's really terrible and horrible, they came to this thing for a reason, right? So what is that reason?
Well, you bring up an example in the book, which I thought was really pretty powerful. And you talk about how you met a guy in a gas station, and you say you met Jesus in a gas station. Why don't you tell that story?
Yeah. So my former workplace, we often referred to people who came to the door to ask for help with gasoline or rent or groceries or what have you. We would refer to them as Jesus because there's a couple passages where in Scripture he says, all these people are me. So instead of looking at them with a mocking voice, we say they're really full humans, right? So fast forward, I was going to the gas station, the UDF, to get some milk for a coffee cart thing that we were doing on campus, and started to open the door, and I heard somebody nearby, so I kind of turned to, you know, let them in as well, and saw this sort of, I would say, middle-aged, maybe black man in a nice suit with a suitcase, and I said, oh, okay, great, you know, can I let you in here, and how you doing? And he said, I'm Jesus. And I was like, oh, okay. And he started telling me about his story, and I was like, oh, there's something else going on here. He is not perhaps as well-dressed as I had originally thought. Something's going on in his head. But I listened to him and took him seriously, because even though the words he was saying were clearly not what was actually going on. He was saying he had come down off the cross and his friends, Peter and James and everyone, had abandoned him and all this. He was speaking the truth of his pain, because he was talking about how his father didn't care for him and how abandoned he felt. And I was like, oh my gosh, there's something real here. It's a little weird, but it's real. And I bought him a cup of coffee and he ended up walking off and it was fine. I mean, it wasn't.
But not everybody could do that. That's pretty brave. I think if somebody comes up to you and says they're Jesus, you're not quite sure how to react. What
Sure.
made you decide to just listen?
Well, I mean, I would say some of it is right place, right time. I suspect that many of us have that experience. So I certainly could tell you stories when I did not respond well, whether internally or externally. Why did I do that? How could I answer that question? What I think it's because I've been practicing it with my students, who I talk about a lot in the book. We find that one of the most important parts of our life together is practice, which sounds kind of weird. But that anything that we practice regularly, and I don't mean necessarily like practicing violin or your tennis backhand or whatever, that's part of it. But just the things that we do regularly, what are those things, right? Do we practice patience with each other? Do we practice listening to each other? Do we practice taking each other seriously? These are all sort of experiments. These are all, practices that make whatever it is that we're doing easier.
Well, you are on UC's campus, right? Mm-hmm. And it's called The Edge, is your organization?
The Edge House.
Mm-hmm. Edge House, there you go. And it has a longer name. You said it used to be called The Edge, didn't really explain it, so you've named it now.
Right. Well, it's The Edge House, a campus ministry gathering place. But the
so people know what they're what they're looking for. But you do something that's very interesting, and I was trying to figure out if I was in college how I would react. You have this thing called the red couch,
yes,
and you just take it to the middle of campus and set up shop. I mean, how does that work?
We do. So we have this this like IKEA couch with a red cover on it, and we put wheels on it. We also have kind of a little folding side chair and a rug and a little coffee table and stuff. So we have like a basically a living room setup. We wheel that onto campus, out into whatever open space we feel like setting up in. We have an A-frame sign as well, a chalk sign that we can write stuff on, kind of provocative stuff on it. And yeah, people come talk to us. It's less like, hey, come over for some free prayer, and more like, hey, come. Like one of the things we put on there regularly is rant to us about religion. We'll listen. And we do. Like the thing that I tell my students when I'm sort of teaching them how to do this is, literally, our only goal is to listen with curiosity, with interest, with that compassion. If somebody comes and wants to talk to us about something we disagree with or we find really horrible, it's like, okay, that's fine. Help me understand this. Tell me more. They make a lot of fun of me because I often say, interesting, tell me more. but it's a really great way to continue a conversation rather than diving into an argument or getting super anxious or stressed about it.
You talk about the sign in the book, and one of the things that you mentioned, it's not always the most pleasant things on the sign. I mean, there's the F word on the sign sometimes.
Right.
Why?
Well, so part of it is authenticity. Our campus ministry, we certainly have a mix of people, a mix of backgrounds, but we find that swearing in particular, while some people struggle with it a bit, we feel like we have bigger things that we need to work on. Societal ills. Also, like, individual, I get angry a lot, and I feel like my anger is something that's more something I need to work on than that particular language, if that makes sense. It also draws people in. They see that and they go, oh, right. Okay, sure. I can talk about my real stuff. Because I think a lot of people look at campus ministries or churches, or it doesn't even have to be religious, groups or spaces where they feel like they can't bring their whole selves. And to me, both the campus ministry that I serve, but also just in general, I think it makes us better humans when we can bring our whole self, whatever that is, without judgment, being able to express what's going on inside us.
So we've talked about the kindness part, and that's all included in all this. Awareness or honesty. Let's talk about honesty next. I think people have a hard time being completely honest. And you talk in the book about just really saying, you don't want to say it to hurt people, but say what you're feeling. Why is that important?
I think a lot of it comes from my sense that I've spent a lot of time in my life trying to, for lack of a better term, manipulate people into thinking what I think. Which in itself, like saying that out loud is sort of a form of honesty, right? Because most of us don't want to admit to that, right? But how often have we said to our spouse or our children or a friend, like, don't you want to go do this thing? Or we try to be subtle about getting across what we need, what we want. When that just tends to obfuscate things. Just say it. Just say that. And it doesn't have to be said prettily either. That's kind of part of my point in that chapter is you don't have to say it in the most beautiful possible way, well-crafted and honed. Just say it.
So give me an example. What could you just say?
Yeah. Well, so I have a new friend. Her name is Annie. Hi, Annie. and early on in that friendship, I thought, gosh, I really like her. She's so fun, and I like being around her. And when she's right in front of me and we're about to go have a cup of coffee or something like that, I want to say it, and it feels uncomfortable. Like it's a nice thing. Why is this hard?
But it feels weird.
It feels weird, yeah. Why can't I just say, I like you. I'm glad you're my friend. You know? Now we've gotten better at it. We can do that now. That's something very small, right? That seems kind of silly. Why couldn't you say that? Kids do it all the time, right? I think that's something. It strikes me also things like I want this thing to happen. Fill in the blank, listeners, whatever the thing is that you want to happen. And then we think like, well, how do I say this? What are the arguments I need to articulate this to the person? Just say, hey, I've been thinking about this. this is something I would like. Can we talk about it?
And they'll either say yes or no or whatever.
Exactly. And that's information. If they say, oh my gosh, what is wrong with you? Why would you ask me that? Okay. That's helpful information. Or they say, oh yeah, that sounds great. Let's talk. Right? It's not hard in one way. In another way, I think it requires vulnerability from us to be able to name for ourselves what we want, what we need, and then to be able to say it to somebody else. It can be scary.
Well, you talk about vulnerability and you call it a gift, but you say it also can be a loss. What's important about letting yourself be vulnerable, and how does that help you become a better human?
Right. Well, I think it has to do with authenticity. Being vulnerable means sort of you're peeling back layers and allowing someone else, sometimes even just yourself, to see something that is deeply true for you. And obviously that's scary. But if you think about the relationships in your life or even just like tiny moments when you've done that and it has gone well, you think about how the feeling of being known, being truly yourself, that really is a gift, even if it's just for a second, right? The problem is that we tend to allow the times when it doesn't go well to overshadow, and then we come from a place of fear and scarcity instead. Well, last time it didn't go well, so I can't possibly do that again, right? But the more we are able to do that, the more we're able to open ourselves up to other people, to share ourselves, but also to receive other people sharing and taking them seriously, the more we're able to do that more, for sure. Practice makes things easier. But the less we're hiding.
So we're talking about vulnerability, and in just a moment, we're going to talk about failure, because you talk about that as well. I'm talking with the author of How to Human, an Incomplete Manual for Living in a Messed Up World, Alice Connor. She'll be at Joseph Beth Booksellers in Rookwood Pavilion tonight at 7 o'clock for a discussion. Not tonight, July 9th. It says right here July 9th, and I've decided that today is July 9th. You will be at Rookwood Pavilion July 9th at 7 p.m. for a discussion and a book signing. We'll continue our discussion in just a moment. And then later in the hour, the future of Korea. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Michael Monks. We continue our discussion now with the author of How to Human, an Incomplete Manual for Living in a Messed Up World, Alice Connor. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. I promised we were going to talk about failure. You talk about it in the book, and you say the thing people have to remember is you're bad at everything at first, and then give it time, you get better. Mm-hmm. People are so afraid of failure, though. What's your guidance in that area?
Yeah. Well, so we talk about, in all the areas I'm in, we talk a lot about what we call spiritual experiments. So if you think about the scientific method. And I will say just a quick aside, I am not a scientist. So any scientists who are listening, I know that this is oversimplified. I'm aware. If you think about the scientific method, the first part of it is asking a question. What if? I wonder if, etc. And then you come up with a way to test that. What if I do this? What if instead of saying no every time someone asks me if I need help, I say yes. What would happen? Would people think that I'm a miserable failure? No, of course not. But I have to try this experiment. And then you do it. And then you look back at it and go, okay, what have I learned here? Was this experiment a failure? Right? That does happen sometimes. But what do I learn from this thing? Did I actually die by doing this thing? No, I didn't die when I said, yes, I do need help carrying this thing. And I like the reason I suggest this. I like the language of experimentation because it doesn't have... it doesn't place a whole lot of weight on the thing that you're experimenting with, right? If I say, I need to talk to my partner about this big, heavy, scary thing, that's a lot. But if I say, I wonder what would happen if I said to my partner, we need to talk about this and it's kind of scary. Before you even get to the thing.
So they're ready.
Right?
They're ready.
Yeah, so they're, well, yeah, and it's not like, this is scary, so get prepared. It's more like... identifying for yourself what feels like failure, what feels scary to you, and sort of addressing that with an experiment of some kind. Yeah.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. We go now to Anna. Hi, Anna. What's your question? Anna? Hi, Anna.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
So I went to the University of Dayton, and I had a really great campus, not Crusade for Christ, but, religious experience, and just felt really supported. But when I left college, I felt like the door was shut in my face. No one wanted to have discussions. If I didn't, fall in line, I wasn't accepted. And so part of me is like, please, can we do this in our churches and in our faiths and outside of campus, too?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
It needs to happen there, too.
Yeah.
So that was my comment.
Yeah. You're totally right about that. It's a struggle, I would say, not just in the church, probably in a lot of places, that we, as humans, we have some sort of transformative experience. We are really feeling, for lack of a better term, our soul or our spirit, like there's something going on, and we want to explore that more. And sort of the institutions we create, we build those institutions to have rules and guidelines and kind of almost ways to put those amazing experiences into a box. And then we get stuck instead of being in a box. What I'm trying to do with this book, but also just in general with my relationships, is to change that box into a door. And I completely agree with you. I would love to see more places of worship, but also institutions kind of be more open to questions and curiosity, instead of kind of a smackdown. Yeah.
Anna, thanks so much for your call.
I love that.
We appreciate it. Sure. Our number again, 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, that sort of goes into something that you wrote about in the book, I think. The whole idea, the difference between costumes and clothes. Mm. And I thought I knew what you meant when I read it, and I sort of did. But you said in the end, everybody's in a costume. Why don't you explain what you mean by how people behave and what this whole costume and clothes thing means?
Sure. Yeah. So I began that chapter just briefly talking about this goofy game that sometimes my friends and I play when we go to gaming conventions or similar. So a lot of people like to wear costumes to conventions. And it's fascinating. Sometimes you can't tell if it's a costume or just regular clothing. And so it's not a mocking game for us at all. It's really kind of an interesting, like, what do you suppose? Is that Supergirl or is that just clothes? I don't know. So that was sort of the beginning of it, right? But this idea that all of us kind of create, the costume is a metaphor for creating a personality, creating a cardboard cutout maybe of ourselves that we hold up to keep ourselves from being vulnerable. I mean, to go back to that, we are protecting ourselves. One of the things we talk about at the Edge House is that at some point in our life, all of us realize that the world does not love us unconditionally. And that's deeply painful, particularly because it usually happens at some point when we're kids. And so we create this way of protecting ourselves from that pain. And sometimes we are so good at it that we don't even see our own pain ourselves. And that's sort of the costume. We are performing a role. And it's not that the role is totally separate from us. It's not a whole other personality, but it is a protection. It's a form of armor. And so how do we begin to kind of remove that costume and actually fully be ourselves? It requires vulnerability and presence, compassion.
One of my favorite lines that you had in the book, it's one I think I want to remember a lot, is discomfort is how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's something people are afraid of. It's very hard not to feel comfortable, to allow yourself to be uncomfortable. But how do you feel that that makes people learn more?
Right. So I had a friend years ago, back when I used to do summer camp work, who he talked about sort of a target shape, where if you think of the very center of the target, this is the place in your life where you are the most comfortable, just so cozy. You know, imagine your couch and your blanket and your cookies and your tea or whatever it is that makes you cozy. And then if you think of sort of the outer ring or almost beyond the outer ring, this is the place where you are the least comfortable, not just uncomfortable, but unsafe. Everything is just overwhelming and frightening. And of course, then there's a space between those rings. The center part where we are the most comfortable, we don't learn generally. I'm sure there are exceptions, but we don't learn because we don't need to. Everything is good, right? Sure. But also sort of the opposite of that, that outside ring where everything is so overwhelming, we can't learn there either. When we are unsafe, our brains are on fight, flight, freeze. There's no learning there. But the space between, this sort of ambiguous space where we're just uncomfortable enough to need something to change, to need to see something different. That's where we learn something. And that can be failure. That can be confronted with someone else's truth that's different than ours. It can be lots of things. We need that space, though. And we tend to, in the book, I talk about how we tend to conflate discomfort with a feeling of not being safe. But they're not the same thing.
So you got to watch out for that.
Yeah.
See which is which.
Yeah.
You also, in just a few minutes that we have left, talk about the importance of sharing a meal. Why is that a big deal?
Well, I kind of joke that sharing a meal is important because it gives us something to do with our hands. If you think about how many parties you've been to, you know, just standing around, like, what do I do with my hands? Sharing a meal with another person is a form of trust. There's sort of the literal level of which in which I trust you not to poison me. But we're also sharing time.
Wow, that's true, yeah.
Right. I mean, hopefully most of us aren't in that space anymore, but but sort of emotionally as well. We're sitting across the table from each other and we're sharing with each other. And it's, I'm certainly not the first person to say it. It's an age-old concept and tradition that we break bread together. I talked a little bit in there about what is it called? The Great Picnic? The Big Picnic? Now I can't remember what it was called. But this is a couple years ago now, down at the border, an artist set up a picnic table on both sides of the border fence and invited people to come and eat. And people did. And that band sort of formed on both sides. It was beautiful to signify we really are all people together. We have our individual, even cultural differences that we need to pay attention to. But how do we do that? How do we pay attention to those things? How do we take each other seriously? We have to sit with each other. And food helps.
So you've been working on a college campus for 10 years, mm-hmm. I think is right. Mm-hmm. Any changes you've noticed in we've just got a short 20-second answer here.
You know, I don't know that I have. People ask me that a lot. I don't put a lot of stock in generational changes. And maybe I'm wrong about that. But I don't see a lot of difference. I see a lot of people who want to know and be known, to love and be loved.
And the way they do that may change over time, I suppose.
Sure,
But the basis is still there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you still bring out the red couch?
Oh, absolutely. Yep. I think just last week.
Oh, even in the summer?
Oh, yeah.
Even in the summer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
I've been talking with the author of How to Human, an Incomplete Manual for Living in a Messed Up World, Alice Connor. Now, she'll be at Joseph Beth Booksellers in Rookwood Pavilion. Now, let's get this right this time. That's Tuesday, July 9th at 7 o'clock for a discussion and a book signing. In just a moment, we're going to talk about the future of Korea. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Michael Monks.